in a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh, my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
Wow. And this is Dallin. Incredible stuff there. You sounded like a jet engine taking off.
Dude, that felt crisp. I'm not going to lie. That felt good. We were just talking about Top Gun, so fitting that you you mentioned jet engine. That felt good. That felt good.
You got the Top Gun takeoff and the Top Gun mustache out here. Hey, yo, watch out, ladies. Mitch Moe's looking nice. The handlebars.
Man. Oh, dude. This thing's going to get immaculate. I'm just working on it. It's a work in progress, but it's going to get there.
It's looking good. Obviously, you guys can't see this, which is just a damn shame. But it looks gorgeous. We are here. It's another beautiful day and another podcast. We've got a treat for you guys today. We'll get into some news and notes around the world of sports here in the beginning half of the podcast. But on the back end, we're going to be joined by our good friend Jordan Fox, a Sports Hour guy, to do a little talk about the GOAT, the greatest NBA player of all time. In fact, we had this conversation, Mitch and I, on, I believe it was, what, episode 10?
10, July 2nd, 2018.
Yes, yeah, almost a year ago. We're recording this on July 6th. 2022, and we
four
did
years
back
ago.
In,
4 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, four years ago. Did I say, what did I say?
A year ago, but.
Oh, much longer than that. 4 years ago. And we did our top 10 NBA players of all time, and we're going to revisit that, and we are going to be joined by Jordan Fox to add his take on that, which should be fun. So that's what you got looking to look forward to on the back end. But Mitch, to start, we've got to start where we always do. You brought the energy on the first intro. Now it's time for another intro, Mitch. It's time for the news.
Let's get into the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news! Before we get going, I have a little Linda news.
Oh, good. Good, because refresh the people where we were at last time with Linda.
So last time where we were with Linda, she was not home yet. She had fallen ill on her trip to New Mexico, or not New Mexico, the original Mexico, the OG Mexico.
OG Mexico.
Anyway.
Not that old new one over there in America, like the legit the original, you know what I mean?
Yeah. She had fallen ill, and I didn't know that she had fallen ill until her son had reached out to me and was explaining what was happening, because I was collecting her packages as they came in. And
right, the best neighbor in the world, Mitch, you know.
Well, I don't know about that, but I am happy to report Linda is home. I talked to her yesterday. She was home a few days ago. Talked to her yesterday. Unfortunately, she had fallen down with like lower lobe pneumonia in her lungs.
Wow.
And it was kicking her butt, but she kicked its ass right back. So big dub for Linda. And I'm glad to see her back. I'm glad to see her back. So Linda is back home and safe. I'm happy to report. So
Thank you for the update, Mitch. I mean, that's why they call her Linda. You know what I mean? Because she is a badass woman. So we're happy for her. I do got to know, Mitch, because Caitlin and I are planning, currently planning a trip to Mexico here in a couple months. What part did she go to? Just out of curiosity, do you know what part of Mexico she was in? Is there a general area I should avoid to get lower tube pneumonia?
I have no idea, but if I had to take a stab in the dark, it was Tijuana. I mean, TJ is TJ is not.
You can get a lot of stuff. You can get a lot of worse stuff in TJ. So honestly, to come out with only pneumonia is a pretty good deal there. So thank you. Thanks for the update, Mitch. We love Linda here on the podcast. Let's start the news off with the one bit of NFL news, which actually came down today on July 6th. It has to do with my Carolina Panthers, who have traded for yet another quarterback. It's yet another name to bring into this god-awful mess we have here in Carolina. But the Panthers have traded for the former number one overall pick in the 2018 draft, Baker Mayfield. It's finally happened. We've been waiting all offseason for this Baker Mayfield trade, which was inevitable, despite the fact that Deshaun Watson may be suspended for an entire year. You know, despite any of that, Baker had to be out of there. There's no way he was going to keep him. And where he was going to go seemed like Seattle, Carolina were the most likely destinations, but he ends up in Carolina. The Browns are going to pay $10.5 million of his salary, while the Panthers will only be on the hooks for $4.85 million, essentially $5 million to the Browns. Browns paying twice as much of the salary just to get off of him, and then the Browns will receive either a fourth or a fifth round pick in 2024, according to Mayfield's playing time. It'll go to a fourth rounder if Baker plays 70% of the snaps this next season. If he doesn't, it's a fifth rounder. And again, this is not a 2023 draft pick, but actually a 2024 draft pick, fourth or fifth rounder. So, Mitch, my reaction to this is let's get Josh Rosen on this team. Okay. Like, what? Like, let's not fuck around anymore. All right. Like, if we're going to do this, let's do this. Okay. Let all three of the 2018 quarterbacks duke it out for the crown. Okay. Cause it's all shots in the dark at this point. That's what Darnold has been. But at the same time, I feel much more confident in the Panthers' outlook in 2022 with Baker Mayfield at quarterback, or at least in the competition, than just rolling into training camp with Sam Darnold and a rookie quarterback in Matt Corral. Like, that is an absolute horrid situation. Baker Mayfield affords you a quarterback who has been better than Sam Darnold in their NFL careers. Like, just full stop, has been better and shown at times to at least not only be an average starting quarterback, but an above average quarterback, right? A guy that leads teams to the playoffs, when it's working right, when he's healthy, but when the team is good around him. And the Panthers are trying to build that team. I think this young defense is going to continue to improve. The offensive line has certainly improved. The pass catching weapons and the running back there and Christian McCaffrey are solid. So if an above average quarterback can find themselves in the situation, I feel like the Panthers can be successful. And there is a much higher shot that quarterback's name is Baker Mayfield in 2022 than it's Sam Darnold. And so for that reason, I love this for the Panthers. They're only paying $5 million out of the $15 million owed to Baker Mayfield. Huge W. You only gave up at best a fourth round pick in 2024. If this guy, or at worst a fourth round pick, if this guy's your starting quarterback, it's way beyond worth it, right? If this guy is going to be a starter for a couple years, it's way beyond worth it for $5 million and a fourth round pick. So I love this for Carolina. I'm glad they waited, because the draft day, we knew there were trades available. They were considering a trade for Baker. Probably would have been higher, probably been more a third of a fourth at that time. They waited. They got to take on less salary and didn't have to give up a big pick for it. So I think it's a huge win for Carolina. And now there's optimism as far as their season outlook and what really, like, they could actually be at the best an average team in the NFL.
Yeah, this makes me much, much higher on the Carolina Panthers. Like, not like they're winning the division, but like, they could be a wild card contender if the chips fall right. Because you don't have to lean on Sam Darnold or Matt Corral. You don't have to lean on any of that. I think the interesting part of this, too, is that, like, he's going to be paired up with Ben McAdoo now. And Ben McAdoo, like, really was low on Baker Mayfield when he came out of the 2018 draft. In fact, Ben McAdoo had him sixth of the all the quarterbacks coming out of that draft. That was below Mason Rudolph, who he had at number five. So, you know, that's going to be an interesting dynamic that we're going to see kind of unfold over the coming months as we head into the NFL season. But you're absolutely right. With above average quarterback play, the Carolina Panthers aren't just a team that is going to be, you know, subpar, below the league average. And I think that this puts them in a conversation of possibly a wild card appearance if all the chips fall right. So financially, it makes great sense for the Carolina Panthers. They don't give up too much capital. They're paying $5 million and a mid-round pick for a guy that has been a starter in the league for the last 4 years. And right now at the bottom of the starting caliber quarterbacks, but he's still starting caliber, and he's much more starting caliber than Sam Darnold is.
Right, and I think that's the important thing to keep in mind here. And I've seen quite a few people continue to dig on the Panthers in this process of finding a quarterback. The Matt Rhule era of this Panthers regime has been awful when it comes to quarterbacks. First, it was Teddy Bridgewater. Then it was Sam Darnold. Now it's going to be Baker. You've also drafted a quarterback. Like, obviously, the plan hasn't been good. Like, but that we already knew that the last few moves that they made, like, this doesn't do anything else for that. But what it does is bring in a better quarterback than they currently have. And that's what matters, right? Is Baker Mayfield the best starting quarterback option out there? No, there's a reason why the Browns made the move that they made to upgrade at that position. Now we'll see how much he actually plays, right? Deshaun Watson, suspension pending still on the determination there, but they made that upgrade because clearly the Browns feel Baker's not enough to be a Super Bowl winner, but the Panthers just need competency. I mean, they just need something better than hoping Sam Darnold finally emerges in year five. So with that being said, it's a great move for the Panthers, and I don't understand why people are sort of digging them for going after Baker Mayfield. There's literally not a better option out there for them. And considering the current situation, how could you not feel more optimistic about their outlooks next season?
I think the most interesting point here that I want to make is that the Cleveland Browns aren't even the biggest loser in this deal. It's the Seattle Seahawks. The Seattle Seahawks had an opportunity to go get Baker Mayfield, make the move that they need to make at the quarterback position. Now they're stuck with Drew Lock or Geno Smith. And the Carolina Panthers had the foresight and the fortitude to go out and make this move and go out and address the quarterback position that they're clearly struggling on. So when you look at this deal, it's actually a team that's not even involved in the deal that winds up being the biggest loser. And I think that's the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I, at the same time, I do think Seattle is looking more towards a rebuild here and is probably looking towards the 2023 draft and hoping to be in the market for one of those quarterbacks. And if that's your plan, then Baker Mayfield doesn't fit into that, even though he would be an improvement over Drew Lock and Geno Smith and is still young, like doesn't quite fit the timeline as much for Seattle. Especially if they really do want to go towards more of a breakdown rebuild than it does for Carolina right now, with Matt Rhule needing to have a successful season or his job is going to be on the line, and needing to sort of see what you have out of the rest of the team. Because, I mean, you just don't have fair evaluations of DJ Moore and, this offensive line and some of these players, because the situation has just been shit at quarterback. You don't even know how good these guys really are. You haven't been able to be consistent enough. So that hopefully Baker gives you that in 2022, and we will surely see. But I mean, if they're going to go after two of these 2018 quarterbacks, I'm just saying Josh Rosen, if he's not available, I bet you get him for a conditional seventh. Okay.
Come on. I wouldn't wish Josh Rosen even on the Green Bay Packers. That's how bad Josh Rosen is.
I'd even take him at this point. That's how desperate I am as a Carolina Panthers fan. You hate to see it. Mitch, that's it for the NFL news. Let's jump to the NBA, because obviously there's been a quite quite a week in the NBA. In fact, we talked last week on the podcast we recorded just about a week ago, and we mentioned that free agency was about to begin, and we would sort of address a lot of that on this week's podcast. And surely, like right after we did that, everything started sort of happen. We're gonna start with something that hasn't happened, but I mean, we think will happen, and that is the Kevin Durant trade. KD has requested a trade from the Nets. The Nets probably moving on from him and Kyrie Irving. KD requesting a trade is unprecedented for a player at his stature with 4 years left on his deal to be available on the trade market. He could really go anywhere. His top destinations would be Phoenix or Miami, but they have complicated situations there in order to get, you know, KD on that roster. One of the late emerging teams that have really come out as one of the favorites in betting odds have risen drastically the last couple of days is the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors have a ton of young players, have shown a willingness. The owner and Masai Ujiri have shown a willingness to make big moves, right? Like trading for Kawhi Leonard not that long ago to win a championship. Would they be willing to go after Kevin Durant with some of the young assets that they have? Potentially, reportedly, they're not interested in involving Scottie Barnes in that conversation, which would be a non-starter for me if I was Brooklyn. But Chicago also mentioned, I mean, every team has probably sent a trade request already. But Mitch, what do you make of this KD trade request? Is there a team out there, a fit out there that you like the most or you feel like would be the most intriguing?
Man, I don't know if there's one that really stands out amongst the rest. I've also seen rumors about him returning to Golden State, which would be a wild move that I don't think is going to happen. I don't think that he goes back to Golden State. If he does, I mean, it's clear he's a ring chaser. He's just chasing rings then. I would really like, I know that it's complicated, but I would love to see him in Miami. I think that I talked about this when we were talking about the Eastern Conference Finals, how Jimmy Butler's just one big guy away. He's one big star away. Kevin Durant would absolutely fill that void that he needs to make a serious finals run. I know that that's a little bit more complicated than just saying it. I would really like to see the Heat. I think the Suns would be a great deal as well. But the thing with the matter of the fact is that the trade market was really reset when the Minnesota Timberwolves traded Rudy Gobert. Like it reset the trade market of what the value of guys is going to be. And it really makes Kevin Durant possibly the most valuable trade piece in the NBA over the last 50 years. Like he's going to be a guy that is going to be highly sought after. The price tag is going to be immensely high. And they're going to be, I think, several front runners. I don't think that there's going to be just maybe two or three teams that are going to come out of this as the front runner before the trade is made. I think there's going to be probably four, five, six teams that possibly could get a deal done. So I would love to see him in Miami for the sake of Jimmy Butler finally getting a chip. But I know that the possibility of that happening, given Miami's situation, is going to be tough.
It's going to be tough
really
for anybody.
Wide open deal, though.
It's going to be tough for everybody.
It's a wide open deal for Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I think that's where I differ on you, Mitch, is I don't think there's a lot of teams that are going to be in on this because I don't think there's a lot of teams that can put the draft capital and players together to give a package that's anything close to worthy of Kevin Durant with 4 years left on his deal. I just don't think there's a lot of teams out there that are going to have five, six plus first round picks, plus all-star level or young players that can develop like two packaged together for Kevin Durant. And that's what sort of makes this interesting is, I mean, we'll likely see three or maybe four team trade in order to get this done, to move around enough pieces and assets to find the package that convinces Brooklyn to make this deal. You know, I do think the Miami thing is the one that sort of makes the most sense in the fact that they were in the NBA finals not that long ago, fell to LeBron, right, in the Lakers in the bubble. And then they were in the Eastern Conference finals again this year, falling just short to Boston. But this is a team that clearly sees its window and is trying to take advantage. Making a move for Kevin Durant makes sense. What makes Miami complicated and in the same similar way will make Phoenix complicated, is there is a rule in the NBA that you cannot have two players on your team that are both signed to a max rookie contract extension, coming off of their rookie deal, getting that max contract. And the Brooklyn Nets have one of those players on their roster in Ben Simmons. So they could not acquire in a trade, for example, Bam Adebayo, who signed a rookie max contract extension. They could not acquire him in a trade for Kevin Durant and roster him and Ben Simmons. The Devin Booker or DeAndre Ayton, if Ayton were to re-sign as the restricted free agent, get the max deal, you wouldn't be able to sign him, or sorry, trade him and roster him with Ben Simmons. So it does maybe limit some of those pieces coming back. And if you're not trading those young pieces in your Miami, then what are you offering Brooklyn if it's not Bam Adebayo, right? What are you offering them that makes them want to trade with you if you can't offer that player? Again, that's where I think a 3 or 4 team scenario may be the most likely, where Ben Simmons moves off to another team, you acquire that player that you wanted, at, like I said, a Ayton, Adebayo, and then you're able to move Kevin Durant over there. So that's, again, one of the complications with this Brooklyn thing. But as you said, and we'll get to the Gobert trade in just a second here, but this is going to be, if and when it happens, the biggest trade in NBA history. This is going to be the largest trade in NBA history for a single player. The haul will be unprecedented because we've never seen a superstar at his level become available with that much control on his contract. 4 years left on his contract is huge for whatever team trades for him. It's not usually these superstars who are on the move or on expiring deals, 1 or 2 years left, right? Where there's a gamble, the team that acquires that player is taking the risk of you know, whether that guy's going to resign with them or not. But whoever trades for Kevin Durant at this point is locking him in for 4 years. He could try to get out of it later, but you still got that contract security and him on your roster, and that is going to make this difficult. So I am with you there, in Miami makes the most sense as long as they can figure out the Ben Simmons thing potentially and add another team in there. But I do think a sleeper one that I think is really interesting, and now that they've signed Zach LaVine to his rookie max extension, again, they would have to do some finagling with Ben Simmons as well. But Chicago, a team that is really rumored around Rudy Gobert, a team that feels like they're really trying to push all in. They have a young star in Patrick Williams, who you could package, alongside. Maybe it is LaVine, or maybe it's a Patrick Williams, maybe it's a DeMar DeRozan. Like, they've got a lot of players I feel like you could throw in there and do something interesting. And Chicago feels like the type of franchise that would be willing to make an all-in move for a Kevin Durant type.
I like the Bulls. I like the Bulls making that move too. I mean, that yep. would just be a great veteran presence amongst a bunch of young players. So,
Mitch, absolutely. We've talked a bit about it. So let's get into the nitty gritty of this Rudy Gobert trade, the Utah Jazz trading the 3-time defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert, to the Minnesota Timberwolves. In return, the Utah Jazz received Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Jared Vanderbilt, Leonardo Balmaro, the Timberwolves first round pick a few weeks ago in the NBA draft, Walker Kessler, the big man out of Auburn. And they will also receive the following first round picks from the Timberwolves: unprotected first round picks in 2023, 2025, and 2027, and a top 5 protected pick in 2029. So 4 first round picks, essentially 5 if you add Walker Kessler into this situation, which, considering he hasn't played a game at all, basically still a draft
pick. And the pick swap in 2026.
And a pick swap in 2026. And the biggest thing in here, Mitch, 4 first round picks, you know, all these players, none of these players are big time, you know, sort of trade assets. Walker Kessler is the best player out of that, in the sense that he's a rookie and was a first round pick. These are mid-level, you know, bench depth kind of guys, but 4 first round picks, but 3 of those picks being unprotected is what is really surprising. Typically in these trades, you see lottery protections, top 10 protections all over these picks. You know, half of them don't even end up conveying as first rounders, but the Wolves are just handing the Utah Jazz a first round pick 5 years from now that's unprotected. You have no idea what your franchise is going to look like 5 years from now. I don't care if you've got Ant Edwards, Carl Anthony Towns, all that. I mean, just the landscape of the NBA, you don't know. And that's unprotected. So if you've got the number 5 overall pick, the number 2 overall pick, it's going to the Jazz no matter what. That is crazy. And all that for a guy who is an all-NBA player, an all-star in Rudy Gobert. We know what he is on defense. Let's start on just your reaction, I guess, to the haul for Rudy Gobert, maybe the Jazz side of this, what they got in return for their star player.
Look, I love Rudy Gobert. I think he's a fantastic player. The Jazz won this. They won this trade. I mean, the haul that they get out of Rudy Gobert is unmatched. I mean, you have all the stuff in the world now. If you can retain Donovan Mitchell for multiple years, you have all the picks in the world to try to build around your star, which is Donovan Mitchell. And you give up a big piece, and the Timberwolves now probably have, in my opinion, the best backcourt in the NBA. But it is, the haul is just too good to turn down for trading a guy like Rudy Gobert. I think the Jazz got away with an absolute steal here, getting all that they got in return.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Jazz win this trade in the sense of when you just get that many assets, it's probably going to be more valuable than a single player can bring. And Gobert, with his offensive limitations, obviously is a player that you have to use specifically. And when he's used in that way, he is incredible. He's the best in the league at that. And if Minnesota can get the most out of him, I think he could be a championship caliber player. But when you receive 5 players and 4 picks in return, that haul is just inevitably going to make you the winner. Now, I will say the Wolves didn't really give up anything notable as far as players, to be honest. In my opinion, I don't think the Jazz got any really good players in here. Malik Beasley's a similar player to Jordan Clarkson and makes just as much money. He's probably not staying on this roster. Patrick Beverley makes $13 million a year. Maybe he stays on this roster. Vanderbilt, Leandro Bolamaro, who the hell cares? Walker Kessler is intriguing because, again, first-round pick. If the Jazz liked him, obviously, he was included in this trade, so either they liked him or they felt they could flip him. But as you said, Mitch, the goal for the Jazz now is to build around Donovan Mitchell. They're not done making moves. Mike Conley is likely gone. Bojan Bogdanovic could be gone. Even Jordan Clarkson could be gone. Like, nobody might be safe on this roster. They already traded away Royce O'Neal for a first-round pick from the Brooklyn Nets in the 2023 draft. So now 3 first-rounders next year for the Jazz. So they either use those picks, or they use those picks to acquire a young star to put aside their young star, right? As somebody else becomes disgruntled and says, I want out. I want to go play with my boy Spida. I love Donovan. I want to go play in Utah. Well, now Utah's got hella first round picks to add into trades and, you know, and to make things work. And so I know that they've been rumored potentially to be interested in DeAndre Ayton this offseason, who is still a free agent. They could potentially be involved in a sign and trade there, or just outright sign him if the Suns don't want to match there on the restricted free agent DeAndre Ayton. I like pairing a young Ayton alongside Donovan, who does a lot of what Gobert does, but with a more modern fitting game. And you also picked up all those assets in return for Gobert. So there's options for them to build a young core around Mitchell, and that will be the goal moving forward for the Jazz. And I do think that this trade puts them in the right spot. They had to trade Gobert, Mitch. They had to trade him this offseason. The value was never going to be higher for him, and it was clear that the Gobert-Mitchell backcourt and this construction of the team was never going to be a finals winner. So if it's not going to be it, then you got to pivot and do something different, and I'm glad the Jazz are doing it.
No, they definitely moved on at the right time. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And again, this is still TBD because there are, you know, a lot of the beat reporters and people inside familiar with the Jazz are saying they are not done. There are many moves to be made for them, and this roster is still very fluid. So we will see what the Jazz sort of look like come the start of the season. For the Minnesota Timberwolves, though, Mitch, this is a team that snuck into the playoffs last year, you know, went through the bubble and had a really competitive first round matchup with the Memphis Grizzlies, really gave them a run. And you felt like, wow, coming towards the end of that season, Anthony Edwards, an emerging star in this league, Karl Anthony Towns playing at a high level. There's a lot of exciting things about this team. Now you add Rudy Gobert to this mix. The starting lineup, D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Karl Anthony Towns, and Rudy Gobert. That is a killer lineup. That front court of Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert is the best in the league. what this is going to allow in flexibility for the T-Wolves. That's what sticks out to me. An anchor on defense really solidifies your defense and is also going to help on offense. When you think allowing Karl-Anthony Towns to play more on the outside, he does that already. He's a big man that can shoot outside. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the league, even though he's a power forward. He's going to fit naturally out there alongside Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert is one of the best. He has the highest troop shooting percentage in the league for a reason. He's one of the best big men on the pick and roll. And that's going to unlock not only D'Angelo Russell in the pick and roll, but also Anthony Edwards, who's a big roll to the rim kind of attack the rim kind of guy. In fact, it's interesting to me, Mitch, because Anthony Edwards, his game reminds me at times very similar to Donovan Mitchell. And you saw a lot of symmetry in the way Donovan and Gobert played. Now, I know the fit wasn't perfect, but the way that Donovan attacked the rim, the way Gobert could play off of that ability to, you know, get the alley-oop dunks and the quick feeds, I think that's going to work great with Anthony Edwards and improve his offensive game as well. So not only Gobert going to help on defense for the Timberwolves, but I do think he's going to help on offense and just solidify, make everyone around him better. That's the type of player that he is. So I think for the Timberwolves, it is a lot to give up, but this team has not won in a very long time. I believe they haven't won a playoff series in like 15 years or something. Like it is like they are a franchise that needs something to go right. And if trading for Rudy Gobert and doing all this gets you to a point where you could be a top 4 or 5 seed in the West, you can host some playoff games, you could get to the second round, maybe a conference finals, maybe more if Anthony Edwards becomes truly a star. Karl-Anthony Towns continues to develop. Like, you still have heights you can reach with young players. So I do like this for Minnesota as well.
I mean, like I said earlier, Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns in the same front court. My God, that's the best front court in the NBA. They just catapulted themselves into that category. The defensive contributions and the offensive contributions, like you said, Rudy Gobert, one of the best off of the pick and roll. The contributions that Rudy Gobert adds on both sides of the on both ends of the court. Cat is an absolute stud. He just signed the extension with the Timberwolves as well. A great young core around them. Rudy Gobert is, though still young, now the veteran piece, like, you know, he's 30, the veteran.
So he's not, you know, super young, but he's not old by any means. Still
right.
In his prime.
Yeah. It, but, you know, he's now that veteran defensive piece that you look for. And yeah, the Timberwolves now are. They're serious. They're a team to be taken seriously in the West. That's for sure. That 100%.
Yeah, they definitely improved themselves as they need to be in this Western Conference. And again, like, I think this is a move to win now. Rudy Gobert is going to help them just be better next season. But it's also a bet long term that Anthony Edwards is going to continue to develop. Like, he is still just a second year player who's got a ton of upside, had a huge season last year, can be even better. Right. And if that guy continues to develop and young Karl-Anthony Towns, who's still young, even though he was the first overall pick in like 2015, he's still got years and growth to have. So there's potential still for this T-Wolves team. And I like them in making a move and betting on their young stars to develop. I like that approach from the team in the front office. Mitch, another trade to get to here was Malcolm Brogdon. The Pacers trading Malcolm Brogdon to the Boston Celtics in return. The Pacers got Daniel Tice, Aaron Nesmith, Nick Stauskas, Malik Fitz, Jawan Morgan, and a 2023 first-round pick. That's a lot of players that are probably getting dumped immediately by the Indiana Pacers, but some young guard in Aaron Nesmith that has some potential. Daniel Tice, great backup center. Some young players, if you're interested in a Malik Fitz and a Jawan Morgan, to give shots. But that 2023 first-round pick, valuable from Boston in return for Malcolm Brogdon, who is a great player, had a good time with Indiana, but struggled to stay healthy. And obviously, as they traded for Tyrese Halliburton and drafted Benedict Mathurin in the NBA draft, saw an opportunity to move on from their starting point guard. The Celtics reportedly plan on using Brogdon as a sixth man. We'll see how that works. Obviously, that's a lot of guards. You've got Jaylen Brown, you've got Marcus Smart, you've got Derek White, you've got Malcolm Brogdon, but Brogdon is a great all-around player that is just going to help this team, and that's the type of winning player that you'd want on your roster, depth that you'd want on your roster. If you think about it, just at this Boston team last year, Brogdon is going to be the difference to feeling like you have to throw Peyton Pritchard in the game in the NBA Finals, or knowing you have a guy in Malcolm Brogdon who can give you 18 to 20 minutes, right? And that's going to be a big difference for this Boston team, and that's why I think you make a move like this. So I thought very smart move for Boston, for Indiana to get a first-rounder for Brogdon and a bunch of players. I think that's a good deal all around.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics, what we talked about with them was like there was a lot of guys playing a lot of minutes. And now they have a guy that they can really lean on at the guard position to help take some of the workload off Jaylen Brown. Guys of that that you can really lean on that they're reliable. So I love the move for the Celtics. They get the first rounder out of it. Like you said, a lot of these guys probably aren't going to be on the roster. They're probably going to get cut, but at least they get the first rounder out of it with Malcolm Brogdon they get the first round out of this trade for Malcolm Brogdon. So, the Celtics are in a really good position. And if he's using the sixth man role, you probably have the best sixth man in the NBA.
Yeah. He would definitely thrive in that role, I think, for the Celtics. Mitch, the other trade we wanted to mention, Kevin Huerter on the move from the Atlanta Hawks to the Sacramento Kings. The Kings pick up Huerter, the young guard, in return for Justin Holiday, Maurice Harkless, and a future first round pick. That future first round pick is a 2024 lottery protected first that becomes a top 12 protected in 2025 if it doesn't convey, and then a top 10 protected in 26 if it doesn't convey. So heavy protections on that first round pick for Kevin Huerter. So the price there, not a lot to give up for the Kings to get a young player who was just in a crowded roster there in Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta had so many guys, so many guards and wings that, you know, you had guys to spare. They picked up, they made the trade for DeJounte Murray earlier, right? That's going to take minutes away from somebody. Time to move on from Huerter. And for the Kings, they get up another sharpshooter on the outside to pair up in that on that young team. And, you know, I think that is a good sort of bet to make. Huerter hasn't been great so far in his young career, but hasn't been bad, just not super consistent. And I feel that Sacramento gets makes a good gamble here with that trade.
Yeah, a very good gamble. I mean, bring in another guard. They love guards over there in Sacramento. They love guards. But yeah, I mean, good. They get, you know, they really protect that first round pick if something doesn't happen. You know, something doesn't work out. I think that's great. Kevin Huerter is a guy that can shoot from the perimeter. So, you know, he's a 38% career shooter from 3-point range. So he does have some ability to hit the deep ball. So, you know, great move for Sacramento. I think it's a great start. They have so much more they need to do to get to be competitive. But I think it's a great start to get a guy like Kevin Huerter.
Yeah, I think it's just a smart move there, and you just don't see the Kings making smart moves very often. So good to see them win one, and we'll talk more about the Kings later when Jordan Fox joins us, as we got to get his thoughts on Keegan Murray and then the whole Jaden Ivey drama. We'll ask Jordan about that a little later on here. Mitch, the one free agent deal that we wanted to talk about, a lot of deals, but none super notable, just sort of role players moving around. Not a lot of big name guys that didn't just re-sign or with the team that they were previously with, but Jalen Brunson, who had a big playoff run, especially starting with that series against the Utah Jazz, signed the deal with the New York Knicks, a 4-year, $104 million deal. The deal includes a player option on the final season. He turned down a 5-year reported $106 million deal with the Dallas Mavericks to return to Dallas. So gets the same amount of money, one less year for Jalen Brunson there. Again, the player option. He's the first player in NBA history to sign a $100 million deal with a new team, despite having never been voted as an all-star. Incredible, this rise for Jalen Brunson, who was a late drafted guy, you know, overlooked after his college career at Villanova. Always a solid player, but one of those guys that the NBA draft just sort of overlooks, and then they become solid NBA guys, and that's certainly what he's done. But with Luka out in that Jazz series, he really emerged as a really formidable player, a guy who was worthy of a starting role and maybe even more. The Knicks certainly buying in on this. I am shocked, absolutely shocked, that Jalen Brunson's getting $25 million a year on the open market. I don't know. I don't know what the Knicks are doing. Who are they bidding against? The deal was like $20 million a year for Brunson to come back to Dallas. 20 a year for 5 years, $106 million. And they're offering him 1-4 for four. Like, I don't see it. I don't see it with Brunson. I think this is another situation of the Knicks overconfident in their valuation, feeling like they have to make a move, and so they're overpaying for yet another guy who's just not going to be that good for them. I'm very perplexed, and I'm not. I like Jalen Brunson, I really do, but I do not like him at 4 years, 104.
I don't like him there either. And I think that this has a lot to do with a couple different factors. One, the Knicks just hired his father, Rick Brunson, to be an assistant coach. So I think that there was maybe. I'm not going to put anything on Rick Brunson to say that there was pressure to bring his son into the organization. I think that would be unfair to put on Rick Brunson, but maybe the Knicks organization felt a little bit of a pressure to bring in his son to play for the team. I also think that the New York Knicks are probably the most incompetent organization in all of sports. I mean, they've missed out on Kyrie Irving. They've missed out on Kevin Durant. They've missed out. And their answer for that, by the way, was not even close to the caliber of player that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving was. They just don't know how to manage a team. And I put that back on Dolan and how unfit he is to run a team. And the Knicks are just. Man, I like Jalen Brunson a lot, but man, he's not worth 104 over 4 years. He's just not.
Yeah, and especially just like so early in his career to be as unproven as he is, and obviously he's had a great stretch here and had a solid career. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but I don't, in my opinion, he hasn't proved he's worth $25 million a year. So this is projection. If you're paying guys for projection who haven't shown you very much other than a couple playoff series, just not going to be in the group that says, yeah, I feel good about doing that. I'd rather wait and see something more proven. But Knicks making another gamble, and obviously we'll see how it pays off. Mitch, as far as free agency goes, there's a number of notable guys still out there we just wanted to mention, and I mentioned this earlier, his name, but DeAndre Ayton, still a free agent. He is a restricted free agent with the Phoenix Suns, meaning that they could sign his offer sheet and match whoever offers him and retain him. They still could potentially do that, so that is an option for the Phoenix Suns there, but he still is a free agent and could be negotiating with other teams, and he's probably a piece that we won't see fall until after Kevin Durant, and probably why he hasn't been signed yet, as is the other restricted free agent on this list, Colin Sexton, the guard for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, the Cavs did re-sign Darius Garland to the Supermax, to the rookie max contract extension, who is a first-time All-Star this year. Do they want to keep that backcourt together? Do they like that fit? Are they willing to move on from Sexton and feel better about Garland? Again, restricted free agent, he could be involved in a sign-and-trade or could just sign somewhere else. So a name to watch. And then also one that I didn't even realize was a free agent, Mitch. James Harden is an unrestricted free agent. And he has been talking with Philadelphia, negotiating with the Sixers to return there. And obviously that does seem likely, but you never know. In the world of Kevin Durant potentially being on the move, wherever he ends up, James Harden could be a part of that or a reaction to that. Somebody makes a move for him. He's technically available for anybody if they can get him the right price and he's interested. So just a couple of names to keep an eye on there, and names that one that we expect to find homes, and obviously we'll talk about here.
Yeah, the most overpaid guy out of that group will be James Harden. And I really think, and I mean, I've never been a James Harden guy. I don't like his play. I don't like his style. But I really truly think that James Harden right now is at the back end of his prime and that he is going to really decline over the next couple years. And he's going to wind up being overpaid over like a 3 or 4 year contract. And so I just he's probably going to be the first one signed, I think, out of this. I could see him going back to the Sixers, but I think no matter where he goes, he's probably going to be overpaid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a reason why he hasn't gotten a deal yet, and that's probably a lot of hesitation because of the age. And I think for Harden, too, I'm with you there. He hasn't shown to be a guy that would age gracefully. He hasn't shown a guy himself to be in the best physical, you know, situation, right? To be healthy, to be fit, available. And if you're not those things now, what are you going to look like when you're in your mid-30s, right? Or late-30s? Like, are you even going to be able to play? And I think that that would be a concern for teams. And, you know, very, very well maybe as he continues to remain unsigned. You know, that I'm sure that's part of the conversations there. But it does seem likely that he'll end up back in Philly. But again, unrestricted free agent, he could go anywhere. Mitch, that's it for the NBA news. A couple more things before we hit the mid-roll here and bring on Jordan. Big news in the world of college sports and college football. USC and UCLA are leaving the Pac-12 to join the Big Ten. And the latest domino to fall in college conference realignment, a year after Texas and Oklahoma announced their departure from the Big 12 to the SEC, USC and UCLA headed to the Big Ten. The Big Ten getting that LA market in their conference. Huge boost to their media deal, reportedly, is going to end up in revenue shares of upwards to $100 million per school in the Big Ten, which is the incentive to making this move. It is important to remember, for those of you listening and may not be familiar with college sports, this has absolutely nothing to do with the football product on the field. This has nothing to do with football on the field. It has nothing to do with any of the Olympic sports who are absolutely getting hosed in this. This has nothing to do with the student athlete. This has nothing to do with anything other than the moolah, the money, the media rights deals, and the market shares. That is what this is about. And the Big Ten being able to add this LA market into their negotiations with Fox when they come time to renegotiate is going to pay off for millions of dollars per school, and that's why they make this move. So the swimming team that has to travel to New Jersey to play their conference meet against Rutgers, who is in their freaking conference, flying across the country every week for these sports, for these events. Yeah, it's for the, yeah, like let's pretend college sports was ever about the student athlete. And let's just face the fact that it's all about money now. And that is why this move has happened.
Let's just throw regionality out of it. I mean, college sports now has lost all regionality. This is the death of the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl no longer has any sort of significance of a Pac-12 versus a Big Ten team in the Rose Bowl at the end of the year. Look, I then realign your swimming teams, for God's sakes. Like, we don't have to realign football because USC has to swim against Rutgers. Realign your swimming teams. Not to say that swimming is any less important than football is, but there are better solutions than this. And I know it's all about the money, but man, I mean, we are seeing the death of college sports as we know it right now. Because of the money, and there will be no amateurism in sports eventually. I firmly believe that. I would not be surprised if we see this trickle down into you know, sub college, you know, high school football rankings at some point, where high school players are getting NIL deals and they're getting, you know, advertising deals to make some money on the side. This is just it's becoming absurd, and I was hoping it wouldn't come to this point after the NIL deal. And we're at that point now where we're having USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten. We lost all regionality with sports in college sports. We've lost all regionality now, especially in college football, because now we're going to have, you know, USC playing Wisconsin. We're going to have USC playing Minnesota on a weekly basis. Like that just doesn't seem right. It doesn't feel right. It does. It makes me feel gross to even think about that. It's just, We've lost sight in college football, and it's really frustrating me right now.
Yeah, this is the reason though, Mitch, and I know you brought NIL into this, but this is the reason why I am okay with NIL, because college presidents get to make decisions based on how much money they can get their school, and fuck the tennis player who has to travel across the state in the middle of their academic calendar to play a meet across the country because their school president decided that they needed to make $25 million more a year to pay their head coach $5 million more dollars a year in football.
That's why colleges suck.
Right? Like this, like that's why, like, if the players could make something for what they do, like, fine with me. But this is, as you said, this is the beginning of the end. I mean, it has been. Listen, Texas, Oklahoma shook things up, but this move is really a move.
That's not even that. That's not that bad. That's not that bad. This is worse.
They started it. That's the thing. This is worse because it's the trickle effect, but this all started with Texas and Oklahoma making the move that they did. It put everybody on edge and thinking about where their future lies. USC and UCLA were the ones who reached out to the Big Ten about admittance. The Big Ten was not out there poaching teams from other conferences. These two schools reached out to the conference about a merger, knowing it would be more valuable and secure for them in their future to be in the Big Ten and not the Pac-12. And now the Pac-12 sits in a precarious position where it may not exist in a couple weeks. I mean, it will exist until the teams have to leave. But I mean, we could see the beginning of the end of this conference as the Big 12 is reportedly negotiating with at least 4 or up to 6 members of the Pac-12, including Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, and or Oregon and Washington to potentially join the Big 12. Reportedly, the Big 10 is not interested in expanding any further unless Notre Dame gets on board, who is reportedly okay with staying independent. So now it's going to be a question of, does the Pac-12 look to add a couple Mountain West schools? Can they poach anybody from the new Big 12? Will the new Big 12 poach from the Pac-12? And the thing is, Mitch, is if they lose another 4 teams, the Pac-12 is over. If there's 6 of the teams left, if half the conference is gutted, the conference is over, right? You're merging with the Mountain West and it's over. That Power 5 status is gone. And we really could see that as a situation. They could also add a couple Mountain West teams and try to survive. We don't really know in this landscape of college football where things lie day to day. It could change so quickly, but we are in a position of a lot of change, again, sparked by Texas and Oklahoma making the move that they did to the SEC, now followed by USC and UCLA. It may not be the end of mega conferences. I would expect the Big Ten and SEC eventually, and maybe not in the next year or 5, but eventually get up to maybe 20 teams each, as they will sit at 16 each in their new formats once these teams move over. But certainly crazy times in the world of college sports.
Yeah, it just makes me sick. I mean, it's the death of regionality in college sports. And I can't take it down.
Mitch,
roll damn tide. Roll damn tide.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Mitch says this, but his guys are the ones with the seat at the table that Alabama will always be a part of whatever national championship exists, will always be the haves, not the have nots. Meanwhile, everybody else will get left behind. Alabama will always be okay.
No, but I want the sanctity of college sports to be retained. You know what I mean? Like I love being a national championship contender, but you know, I want the sanctity of college sports retained. It's a nationwide thing for me. So.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I'm just teasing. Mitch, last bit of news here. You want to do a little NASCAR update before we wrap up?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done a NASCAR update. We are had our brand new 4th of July weekend tradition in NASCAR. It used to be held at Daytona. It used to be called the Pepsi 400 back when I was growing up. That was the 400-mile race at Daytona. In just recent years, they got switched over to Road America up in Wisconsin, a road course, 4-mile road course, by the way, a big, long road course, beautiful scenery, beautiful racetrack. Tyler Reddick gets his first career win at Road America. And I wanted to name this one specifically because he is from Corning, California, which is about 25 minutes away from where I live, Chico, California, where I grew up. A hometown guy getting his first Cup Series win at Road America. Tyler Reddick getting the win for RCR. Chase Elliott, who led a lot of the race, looked like he had the car to beat. Tyler Reddick making the pass with 16 laps to go. Elliott comes home in second. Kyle Larson third. Ross Chastain fourth. Daniel Suarez fifth. Trackhouse Racing, Mr. 305's race team, again with two top five finishes. I wanted to point this out as well. We have had 5 first-time winners this year. This is the most since 1950. In the second year, and that was the second year of the sport's existence. So wow. This is by far the most successful season we've had for first-time winners. Those first-time winners, Chase Briscoe, Ross Chastain, Daniel Suarez, Austin Cindric, and now Tyler Reddick. Also, of the 3 road course races NASCAR has run this year, all 3 of them have been first-time winners. That was Ross Chastain, Daniel Suarez, and now Tyler Reddick. So a great run for Tyler Reddick. Great run for Northern California guys. Love to see the hometown guys like Reddick and Larson get it done. It was a great race to watch. I actually sat down and watched the whole thing. It was an awesome race.
That's awesome, and I think that's a good sign that this new car may not be perfect, and nothing would be perfect, right? There's always going to be something to complain about. But if it means that you're leveling the playing field in a way, you're giving other guys opportunities, and it's paying off with exciting things, right? New racers winning races. That is good for the sport. That brings new eyes, that brings new interest. And to me, I guess that points to a positive sign for this new race car.
And keep in mind, like, there are 16 playoff spots in NASCAR, and it is win and get in. And it is very rare that we have more than maybe 11, 10 winners in a season.
Right.
We've had 13 individual winners so far this year. So
wow. We ain't going to be win and get in by the end of this.
No one has won more than 2 races this year. So, like, it is hyper competitive with this brand new car, which I love. You know, get to see the guys – I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, and I've been talking about to other guys, Michael McDowell, running for Front Row Motorsports, a guy that's like a team that's been very mid pack at best, is putting up top tens on a fairly decent basis. You know, we're looking at these underfunded teams that are, now that the playing field is kind of set a little bit more evenly, They're finding a way to run up front, and it's really making the driver talent shine. And Tyler Reddick should have had 2 wins this year. He could have won at Bristol Dirt before he got taken out by Briscoe, and Kyle Busch wound up winning the race. So glad that he finally got his first win of the year here at Road America.
Yeah, that's awesome. You love to see it. Shout out the local guy. That is great stuff. Mitch, that's going to do it for the news and do it for the first half of this podcast. We're going to take a break and hit a mid-roll. And when we come back, we'll welcome in our good friend Jordan Fox, and we'll do our top 10 greatest NBA players of all time. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back into the Sports Hour with Mitch, Mo, and Dallin. Hope you enjoyed that little break there. A lot of news we went through there. But it's time to get into the meat of this podcast, our top 10 NBA players of all time. And right now we want to welcome on a fellow Sports Hour guy, the beard of the organization, a friend of the show. Glad that he is back here on joining us, Mr. Jordan Fox. Jordan, welcome back on to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, boys. What is going on? How are you?
We are so good. Just we are so excited to have this conversation with you about this top 10. As I mentioned earlier, Mitch and I, we listened back today to the podcast we did 4 years ago on July 2nd, 2018, and we ranked our top 10 greatest NBA players of all time back then.
Episode and we got a 10. Episode 10. I just want to put that out there.
The very beginnings when I was still the Mormon, when we didn't even have the Sports Hour intro everyone knows and loves. It was a different thing. Like, it was wild. It was an experience. But suffice it to say, our opinions have changed. We need a little redemption, but I am excited to get another voice into this conversation and see where you may differ than us.
Totally. Dude, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that early episode and just see how completely off base you guys were, because now I'm interested. This is going to be fun.
Me and Dal were talking before, man, and it was like, we suck now, but like, we really sucked back then. Like, it was bad. So we're glad to have another voice on here to join us for this top 10. But we want to start off with some NBA free agency stuff. Jordan, let's start with NBA draft stuff. We haven't been able to talk to you since then. The Sacramento Kings going ahead and taking Keegan Murray with the 4th overall pick instead of Jaden Ivey. A lot of criticism coming with that pick, but so far in summer ball, Keegan Murray has showed out, man. I mean, what are your feelings on Keegan Murray? Maybe the prospects of missing out on Jaden Ivey. What are your feelings so far?
Yeah, I think this smells a lot like Marvin Bagley over Luka Doncic, right? And not that this is the same situation, but I think that's where that visceral reaction is coming from. Like, the on paper, like, obvious, Jaden Ivey has just like gifted athletic ability. He's that type of player. And so when you see that and then you compare it with a very what some people call boring fundamental player in Keegan Murray, that can start to throw red flags when you're looking at the Kings taking that pick. But that being said, I would have drafted Jaden Ivey, but I understand the pick of Keegan Murray for fit purposes. He was a more plug and play ready guy. He fits better for our offensive needs. It makes a lot of sense. And I'm not going to come on here and overreact to Keegan Murray's summer league performances. He should be putting up 24 plus points on guys. Okay. Let's just get that out of the way. He should be doing that. It was nice to see. I'm glad he did it. But here is what I will say. There's three things for me out of these California Classic games for the Kings that I want to talk about. First, Keegan Murray's defensive ability, and actually the defensive ability of three guys between Keegan Murray, Keon Ellis, and Nemias Keita, your boy, Dallin.
Oh, Nemias Keita, the former Aggie, the Portuguese big man. He is huge, my guy. In real life,
He's a massive
man.
He's so big. All three of those guys had really good defensive performances in the California Classic. Keegan has proven that he is not a liability on the switch when screens come through, which is huge. He needs to be able to guard the perimeter. Keon Ellis had a play in game two that if it happened during the regular season, it would have went viral. Like, he was face guarding a guy. The guy tried a two-hand overhead pass, and he just like took it with both hands. Like, literally, we saw Kawhi Leonard do that a couple years ago, and it went crazy viral. So Keon Ellis, like, looks as advertised defensively. Dude, and Keita just is eating people. Like, they try to come into the key, and Keita's just like, no, that's going 14 rows up. Like, just massive amount of blocks. So, listen, I think there's a tongue-in-cheek thing. We see the Kings fans coming out after we're winning a couple summer league games, and the guys are like, we're getting 40 wins. Like, guys, we're not stupid. Like, that's obviously joking even on our part as Kings fans. We're not going to be good. But the Kings have kind of sneakily put together a nice offseason here. And I think for the first time in a long time, the Kings will be fun to watch, which is an improvement from what I've been able to say previously.
I think that's a fair take there, Jordan, in regards to Keegan Murray, because fit is what like appeals to Keegan Murray. And it feels like they've already made moves to build around certain pieces on this team, namely De'Aaron Fox, right? He's been that guy. And clearly moving away from Tyrese Halliburton and bringing in Sabonis is to support De'Aaron Fox as the focal point of this team. So bringing in Jaden Ivey takes away from that to an extent. It challenges that. Is that the ideal situation to put yourself in? Keegan Murray, on the other hand, fits beautifully into this team, is only going to contribute in positive ways to that. And so I think that's a good way to look at it. And again, we don't know how these players will turn out, but with the track record of the Kings, you know, they took Jimmer and then Klay Thompson goes next. They took Marvin Bagley and Luka Doncic. I mean, you could go through the list. Yeah, it's there. And that history is just hard to forget as a fan. And so I understand that the minute that Jaden Ivey went after Keegan Murray, you are just penciled him in as a future Hall of Famer. Cause that's just like, no matter who was the fifth pick, there was, he was going to be a star and the Kings guy was just not, but I do love Keegan Murray. Yeah, I said it before the draft that he was a guy I thought could turn out to be the best player in the draft. I really do feel that way. I think he has that potential, even though he's a late bloomer and doesn't have anything that's, you know, super stands out, but a great all-around game. So I like it. You know, it's okay to get excited about Summer League.
Yeah, I mean, the dude's an athletic four who can guard in the pick and roll and shoots 45%+ from three. Like, I'll take that. That's fine. Yep. That's going to work out totally fine at the NBA level. So,
and in regards to the Kings as a whole, obviously making that move for Sabonis in the middle of last season, sort of a new look heading into this year with the new head coach. What is, I guess, your feelings on the direction of this team? Do you feel optimistic about where the Kings are at? I know you were a big Tyrese Halliburton guy. We've talked about this on this podcast with you, so I'm sure that stings. But all that being said, are you feeling better about the direction of this team?
I do love Tyrese. My heart is partially in Indiana still to this day. But yeah, when we drafted Keegan Murray, red flags went up a little bit for me, admittedly, because bad teams cannot afford to draft for fit. You have to draft best guy available and figure out how to make it work, in my opinion. But when we drafted for fit and Keegan Murray, I was like, that's fine, as long as Monty McNair makes some other moves afterwards to make it make sense. Because the roster on draft day had so many holes, it just was not going to work. And then we've seen Monty actually make a couple of really nice sneaky moves here. First one coming in Malik Monk, who can just shoot the freaking heck out of the ball, which is what we needed. We got Kevin Huerter from the Hawks on a pretty nice deal, I think, for both sides. We are still probably a wing, and I would say like a third backup point guard away from being a real NBA team, if I were to put it lightly. But yeah, like I said, this is for the first time in a long time, the tongue in cheek of we're going to get 40 wins. Like, we might mess around and get 40 wins and be a heck of a lot of fun and be everybody's league pass team this year. Like, that's kind of what it feels like.
I mean, Malik Monk, a guy you could have had a long time ago when you drafted De'Aaron Fox. You could have had Fox and Monk right out of the gate. And so that's got to feel good to finally get that guy to compliment Malik Monk and bring him in.
It does feel good. It also feels good to give De'Aaron a little bit of say in what the heck's going on. Like, the Kings have been so dysfunctional for so long that, A, even allowing our GM to actually make moves rather than ownership pulling the strings, and then letting your actual star player who you're investing in go, like, get his guy, right? Like, this is a guy that he's played with since middle school. There's already established rapport. Plus, he fills roles that we need, and we got him for the MLE functionally. So, yeah, I mean, I've been very pleased so far. There's still rumors out there that maybe we'll make something happen with the Sixers. Listen, if somehow something happens and we get Harrison Barnes and Rashawn Holmes off the roster and Tobias Harris and Matisse Thybulle come in, I will literally be running down the street with no pants on. Like,
now we're talking.
That is the last.
Wins.
Now we're that talking. That is the last puzzle piece. If that happens, then Monty McNair, like, just put him in the Hall of Fame for the Sacramento Kings already. But we're not quite there yet. But we're gonna be some fun. It should be a fun year.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, too, what I'm most excited about is that investment into Fox, as you mentioned, and just allowing him to really be that star level player, because I think he's just forgotten among NBA fans. I'm sure there's fans who just don't even know he exists, like, legitimately. And he is totally one of the best young guards in the NBA, just forgotten about in Sacramento. And, you know, you hope that maybe as the full focus, a healthy season, a good team, you know, they get a chance to be in that that play-in tournament, which is a great opportunity for young teams, a chance to put him on a national spotlight in a better way. And certainly, I think with the moves the Kings are making, things are looking better in Sacramento. Hopefully they continue. We wanted to ask you one more thing, Jordan, before we get to the top 10 list, and that's in regard to free agency and the Kevin Durant trade. A lot of free agency has kind of been stalled as we await to see what happens with KD. And we know some of his preferred destinations noted as Miami and Phoenix, some of the other destinations out there. Is there a team? I mean, first, your just general thoughts on the trade request and the situation. But is there a destination for Kevin Durant that sort of sticks out to you as maybe the most fun as just an NBA fan?
Man, Kevin Durant just kind of messed up the entirety of free agency, didn't he?
Yeah, I
mean, to put it frankly, boys, nobody can afford Kevin Durant, and the teams that can't afford Kevin Durant, it doesn't make sense for them to do so. Pre Rudy Gobert being traded, I would have felt differently, but when Rudy leaves the Jazz for the package that Rudy went for, imagine what Kevin Durant's package is going to look like. They're asking for multiple all-star level talent plus a plethora of picks. There are a select few teams in the NBA that can do that. And if you are a team that does have that currently, why are you auctioning all of that off for Kevin Durant so that then you have a roster of Kevin? You're looking at LeBron and the Lakers now. You just have Kevin Durant and four other G League players. So I don't know. Honestly, if I were a betting man, I would go to Vegas today and say that come the season, Kevin Durant is still in a Brooklyn Nets uniform and everybody's pissed about it. But I don't know who can afford him. Like, there's a whole lot of teams that would be fun, but I just don't see a realistic world in which Kevin Durant actually finds a suitor this offseason. Guys, is the Nets the biggest failure in sports history?
It is remarkable.
Mean, yeah, I would say so. I mean,
16 games with KD, Kyrie, and Harden on the floor together. That unit recorded 16 games. Granted, there were 13-3 through those 16 games, but you only got 16 games out of that trio. Harden's gone. KD might be gone. Kyrie might be a Laker tomorrow. Who knows what the heck's happening there? Like, this is a mess, and I am sorry, Brooklyn fans.
Yeah, it is. It is certainly crazy to think just three or four years ago they put that together. And the prospects of KD and Kyrie and then Harden added to that. And to come out of all of that with one playoff series win and basically nothing else to show for it is pretty remarkable in hindsight. And yeah, is definitely going to go down as one of the worst, one of the biggest failures in the NBA, that's for sure. All right, guys, I think it's time for us to jump into this. Top 10 NBA players of all time. Mitch, I'll let you intro us into this. Did you want to start with some of the honorable mentions? Do you want to start with number one and get to those when we get to the end? I'll let you sort of lead this thing out.
I mean, I think it would be fair to I went 1 through 15 to be honest with you, but there's some guys that didn't make.
Oh, dang.
That didn't make.
Mitch is going for the A++ today.
So there were some teams that didn't make that top 15 that I just want to mention really quick. Probably controversial names, some of them. Karl Malone, Moses Malone, Kevin Garnett, Julius Erving, and Dirk Nowitzki. I feel like that those guys are worth mentioning, but I think that they'll always be in that top 50, top 75 conversation, but that they're for them to get in that top 10, man, those days are long gone. As good as they were. You know, those days are just long gone for them. They're not going to be in that conversation. Karl Malone, I know, Dallin, you and I mentioned as like maybe number 11 or 12 on our list 4 years ago, and he slipped all the way down because we've seen some outstanding talents over the last few years that have really emerged and cemented themselves as maybe a top 20 player of all time and have surpassed Karl Malone. So, I mean, those were the guys that I had at that honorable mention stage. I don't know if you had anything differing there, any other names that you guys wanted to mention, but.
Yeah, I had similar names to you. And as you mentioned with Malone, he did slip. I had 15 as well because, you know, extra credit. So he did slip out of that top 15. Nowitzki, Dirk was another one. Charles Barkley, another one that I sort of thought of in that tier. What about you, Jordan? Sure. Honorable mentions before we jump in at number one.
Yeah, I mean, I made a list of 10 and then have three honorable mentions after that. So I'll just give you the three.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Great.
Top 10 in order. And one of these is actually probably surprising. I have Bill Russell, KD, and Oscar Robertson in that order as my three honorable mentions. Just made it missing that top 10.
All right.
I love it. I love it. This is great.
We're going to get spicy then. Okay.
We might get spicy. I might piss some people off tonight. I don't know what's going to happen.
This is what it's about. This is why we did this. So, Mitch, take us away.
All right. Well, let's just address the elephant in the room. Let's get it out of the way. Jordan, part of your namesake, let's just get it out of the way. Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time, nor will he ever be surpassed, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, look, this guy... I said it in the episode 10. I will say it now. You only pair someone up with Bugs Bunny to defeat the Monstars and save the galaxy if they are the greatest basketball player of all time. That's all you do that for. And Michael Jordan did that. I mean, not only the production on the court, but the brand that he promoted off the court, his impact on and off the court. Michael Jordan is just – he is your Aaron-ness, MJ. I mean, this guy is just, you could say the name Mike in relationship to basketball and everyone knows who you're talking about. I mean, there's no question about who you're talking about when you say the name Mike. Michael Jordan is by far the best player of all time, and I still think it's not even close.
Jordan gave a little look there when you said that originally. I just want to make sure before we go too far, Jordan, you do have Michael Jordan at number one, right?
Yeah, of course I do. My reaction was the nobody will ever surpass Michael Jordan. That seems a little bit possibly premature. But I think, guys, we are the last generation that will pick MJ with absolutely zero hesitation. Like, I think any generation right after us is probably having a little bit more pause. And granted, like, you're still leaning towards MJ. It has to be MJ. You start getting into that conversation of, like, that was my MJ, right? Like, our Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan, obviously. I watched Space Jam 637,000 times. I watched more Michael Jordan than even modern basketball still to this day, which is probably, like, may or may not be true. But it feels true. I was watching the Last Chance U basketball on Netflix, and one of the episodes, one of the kids, the episode was right when Kobe died, and he was like, Kobe was my Michael. And so I think we are the last generation that can confidently, without hesitation, say that MJ is the GOAT, because each generation after us has a different version of MJ, if that makes sense.
I think
I think that's fair. And I think even before MJ, you know, you ask a lot of people, and Bill Russell was the GOAT. He was the undisputed GOAT for a very long time, right? And so I think that can change. And I don't think necessarily, I mean, obviously I had MJ number one. I don't think he's solidified in that. I do think there are players, you know, maybe currently playing in the league, and maybe players we've never even heard of, don't even exist on the radar, that could potentially pass him. I don't think what MJ accomplished is unbeatable, but certainly being 6-0 in the finals, 5-time MVP, 14-time All-Star, and as Mitch mentioned, most importantly, iconic, the most iconic athlete of all time in any sport.
Still,
so
to
I mean,
day.
To be that is to be the GOAT of all GOATs, Michael Jordan, number one here. So that takes us to number two. Last time around, this is where Mitch and I began to differ already. It happened on number two. We couldn't even get that far. So we'll start with Jordan this time. We all had MJ at number one. Jordan, who did you have at number two?
I mean, this is one and two are obvious. This is obviously LeBron. I will say that I know that Mitch is a notorious LeBron hater, and he tends to respect the old guys a little bit more than I do. So his answer could be different here. But to me, this is a no-brainer, LeBron. I mean, how are you not going to have the one guy who gets talked about as the possible guy who might be the GOAT over MJ anywhere other than number two? Like, you just have to. It makes logical sense. So for me, MJ is the GOAT, but LeBron has to be respected enough to be put at number two.
Okay, I had LeBron at two as well, so I'll just add some thoughts here, Jordan, before we get to you, Mitch. Last time around, I had LeBron at number four, and this was right as he was making the move to the Lakers. And my thought on putting him any higher was it was all projection, right? We hadn't seen LeBron do the things that we, you know, thought he would. So to put him, you know, next to behind MJ seemed a little premature. But 4 years later, having won the championship with the Lakers, getting that, you know, that another ring with a third team, doing something unprecedented in that regard, and continuing to play at such an extremely high level throughout these last 4 years, even though he hasn't been healthy every season, but an 18-time All-Star still, and getting that fourth NBA ring. I think at this point, it is safe to say that, as you mentioned, Jordan, there's only one guy that we even mentioned in the conversation with MJ, and it is LeBron. And I do think at this point in his career, even if he retired tomorrow and never played another game in the NBA, he would be the number two guy on this list. So that's why I went LeBron getting the bump here to number two.
He also has that MJ thing we were talking about, where MJ like transcends the game of basketball and he's impacting stuff elsewhere. Dude, LeBron like has schools. He has his own Nike thing happening. Like LeBron, I think, has that where he transcends basketball also. Sorry, Mo, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to add in with my number two. He was formerly known as Lew Alcindor, the captain, the big fella, the innovator of the skyhook. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is number two on my list.
Okay. That's like fine.
Two-time scoring champ, six-time NBA champ, six-time MVP, 15-time All-NBA, two-time Finals MVP, 11-time All-Defensive Team, four-time Block Champion, a member of the All-50 and All-75 Anniversary Team. This guy's just a 19-time All-Star. 19-time All-Star, are you kidding me? With six NBA chips? I mean, this guy was just, he was in another world. And we talked about this on the first time we did this, Dallin, is like, if there was like a poster that you were supposed to make of someone making a shot or going up for a dunk, one of the first ones you think of is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar doing the skyhook over someone. I mean, this guy, he made a single shot, iconic in itself, across the entire world of sports. So like the Kareem has got to be at the top for me, right behind Michael. I understand the LeBron sentiment. I really do. I have too much respect, I think, for the pioneers of the game and the guys that really built this thing, and a guy that really ushered in a modern era of basketball, playing through the 80s up until, you know, the beginning of the 90s. He started to usher in that modern era, and I really like Kareem at number two.
Yeah, I mean, Kareem has the numbers, right? He's still the all-time leader in points scored, and LeBron will most likely pass him, but he hasn't done it yet. So Kareem still has that, and six MVPs is more than anybody else has had, and that record is probably going to stand as well. So he certainly has those accolades. I had Kareem second last time, Mitch. You had Kareem fourth behind Bill Russell, behind LeBron. What was maybe your motivation and what makes the difference this time around to move him up to number two?
I was just wrong. I was just wrong, to be honest with you. Like I am not afraid to admit when I'm wrong. I really was just wrong. He should have been above those both those guys. Really
okay. Good. Fair enough. Jordan, any thoughts on Kareem here at two?
Yeah, no, I thought that this is how Mitch was going to construct his list, and it's fine. Like Kareem is third on my list, just if we want to skip ahead there, and we don't need to spend more time on that because Mitch basically, you guys have covered everything there is to say. Like Kareem is obviously one of the greatest of all time. So Kareem's third on my list. Like it's not, I don't think it's a stretch, Mo, for you to be like, yeah, I like him better. Number two, that's fine. I just prefer LeBron.
I will say that like two through four, you could really shuffle those around for me. The two through four that I had on my list, shuffle them around, and I would feel okay with either one of them that too. So,
yeah, I had Kareem at number three as well, alongside Jordan. So Jordan and I, three for three here, MJ, LeBron, Kareem. And as I said, 4 years ago, we did this, I had Kareem at two, and LeBron doing what he's done has sort of bumped him there for me. But Kareem is like that next obvious guy, at least the one that comes to mind for me in this top three. I felt very comfortable with the top three. Everything after that was a little more shaky on my opinion. Felt really good about those three guys. being up there. Mitch, so obviously you didn't have Kareem at three like Jordan and I. Who did you have at number three on your list?
This is where I had Bill Russell. I had Bill Russell at number three. Look, I know last time that we talked about this, but the scoring was the big thing, right? Because he only averaged 15.1 a game throughout the entire of his career. In fact, he averaged at a peak of 18.9. That was in 61-62 season. But look, he didn't have to score. He didn't have to score. He had guys like Sam Jones and Bob Cousy and John Havlicek to supplement that scoring. He was the rebounder. In fact, he averaged over 20 rebounds from 1957 through 1967. So, I mean, that's over 10 years of averaging 20 plus rebounds a game. The guy was an absolute rebound machine. He didn't have to score. He had guys that could score around him. 11-1 in the finals, 11 chips to his credit, a five-time MVP, 11-time NBA champion, 11-time All-NBA, 12-time All-Star, obviously a Hall of Famer. So, look, Bill Russell, for me, is he still has to be in that conversation in the top five. And maybe number two was a little bit rich the last time we did this, but I have a hard time keeping out of the top five, and three seems just about right for me.
Yeah, fair enough. And as I mentioned earlier, I think for a lot an older generation, he is the GOAT, right? That 11 NBA titles, five MVPs. It is hard to touch those accolades for Bill Russell. We're going to see a theme throughout this, which is already clear in that Mitch values the history of this game, I think, a little more than Jordan and I are going to in this list, having Bill Russell up higher. Obviously, Jordan already mentioned Bill Russell didn't even make his top 10. Which is going to be the biggest difference we have here. Clearly,
he was 11, tragedy. And the guy that came in at 10 is going to piss Mitch off. But that's okay. We'll get there.
I love it. I had Bill Russell in my top 10. I'll get to him later though, because he's not in this area. But we'll jump to number four here, and I'll go ahead and go first here. So number four for me, I had Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson here at number four for me, and I felt pretty good when it came down to this on Magic. Three MVPs, 12-time All-Star, 10-time All-NBA, and five NBA titles. And as we alluded to with some of these players earlier, just impactful guys that grow beyond the game, right? Become something beyond just the game of basketball. And I mean, just that nickname, Magic, in and of itself is iconic, right? The Showtime Lakers that he led. Iconic and Magic, an iconic athlete in the history of the NBA. And so for me, you know, with his accolades and you compare him to some of the other players around him, some of his peers that played in that era, I think he stands out amongst those for not only his prowess, three MVPs, but also the success in the NBA finals. So Magic at number four for me. I had him, I think, at three last time. So kind of the same spot. LeBron jumps him. He bumps back one, but I had Magic at four.
Yeah, down. We're four for four, just so you know, buddy. I also have Magic at four. So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, listen, guys, 19.5 points in a game, 11.2 assists, 7.2 rebounds, over 906 games over 13 seasons. Like, the dude, and it didn't take him a long time to heat up. Like, that literally started the second he came into the league. He was different. He was different. So Dallin covered it pretty well. But yeah, Magic is my fourth off the board. And just so you guys know, we are in the middle of a five Laker run for me, which is not something I realized until I was looking at my list right now.
Oh, you know, it's funny because last time Mitch accused me of being a homer by bumping all the Lakers up on my list. And here we have the resident Sacramento Kings fan giving the Lakers bump here. You love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a reason everybody hates them. Like, they just like dominated for so long and have had so many generational talents. Like, it's just, it is what it is. I gotta accept it.
Fair enough. All right, Mitch, who did you have at number four?
This is where I had LeBron. I had LeBron at four.
So that
and like I said, him, Kareem, and Bill, you really could shuffle those three around, and I would feel okay with whoever at two. I really would. And just to stay on the Magic train, Magic is where I had him at number five. So I think that had he not gotten sick, man, we could have been looking at one of the all – I mean, a top two guy, really, I mean, this guy was just something special. And it was clear out of the gate, right out of Michigan State. He had the legendary rivalry with Larry Bird that made it that much special. And and you know, had he not gotten sick and Larry had not had the back issues that he had at the end of his career, man, we could have been looking at something really special in the mid 90s when those guys were kind of at the back, would have been at kind of the back end of their career. But I'm really glad of what we got out of Magic and Larry, and Magic has got to be number five on my list. I mean, he was really just something from outer space. I mean, his ability to dish the ball out was unmatched.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, you mentioned Magic and Larry. I mean, those guys saved the NBA, you know, I mean, they say it, but those guys saved the NBA by putting butts back in the seat and interest back in the sport. And, you know, now you've seen what it's grown to in a large part because of those two guys. I love that. Mitch at number five. Jordan, who did you have at number five on your list?
This may or may not be controversial, but I have Shaq here at this spot. So, yes, Shaq is going over Kobe for me. Shaq is the most physically dominant big man in basketball history. I mean, he just was absolutely untouchable. And like the image of him dunking and shattering backboards is going to forever live on in my brain. And like we could list the accolades, 14-time All-NBA, 4-time NBA champ. He won MVP in the three championship years over Kobe while he was on the team with Kobe doing all the crazy things he was. And also, again, like this doesn't really play in massively to my list, but like Shaq's still around. Shaq's on the most entertaining like NBA product on television right now with the TNT crew. And so he's still around. He's making an impact. People still love him. And add that to the absolute dominance that was Shaquille O'Neal. Like, this is a no-brainer for me at five.
I love that the Kings fan, traumatized by Shaquille O'Neal in the early 2000s, paying his respects here. And you love to see it because that, I mean, that was a dominant player. And you just tend to forget, you know, now he's a DJ and he's on TNT. And it's just like, you know, you just think of him as a different person. But that guy was a absolute monster on the basketball court. I love that you put him at number five, Jordan, because 4 years ago, I had Shaq at number five. And I have moved him down my list, but I was like equally as high on Shaq. I'll get to him later when he shows up. But I had originally been high. I've come down on him, but it's hard to just deny when you look at somebody just truly dominating in the NBA over a certain span. There's not many who dominated as well as Shaq did.
Shaq's physical prowess, and even like pre-Lakers, like his Magic years, was something special. I mean, this guy was agile and just as physical. I mean, this guy was just an absolute monster. So I have no problem with Shaq at five.
Boys, I'll tell you what, I do put a large stock in guys that change the game too. Like, it's going to come up later, obviously, but like the Hack-a-Shaq thing was not only like new, but a necessity for Shaquille O'Neal. So having a player be that physically dominant to the point that you literally need to change your entire defensive game plan when you're coming in against the Lakers. So like, if this guy touches the ball, we are just going to literally mutilate him, all five of us on the floor, until he's dead, and like make him shoot free throws. That to me carries a lot of weight too.
Yeah.
That could be a factor of the fact that he could just couldn't shoot free throws.
That's also true, but I'm not going to have that be a knock on him. I mean, if I had hands that large and I was shooting a ping pong ball, I would have a hard time too.
I love it. All right. My number five here, I had Magic at number four, and this is where I had Larry Bird penciling in at number five for me. I had Magic and Larry back to back, and Mitch has given me a look here because Mitch, you said this earlier. You said, I made a mistake not putting Kareem at two and putting Bill Russell. I made a mistake last time. I put Larry Bird at number 10. And that was mad disrespectful. And it was probably just out of spite for the Boston Celtics. All right, I'll just say it now. I don't remember my mindset 4 years ago, but likely just spite for the Celtics and not wanting to reward them and instead rewarding my Lakers like Shaq, you know, putting him up there. But I have reflected on this, and I believe I was mistaken. And that's why I'm going to put Larry Bird here, five. Behind Magic, his peer, his rival, his friend here, even though they had very similar careers, both three MVPs, both 12-time All-Stars, both 10-time All-NBAs. One of the biggest differences, though, five NBA titles for Magic, three NBA titles for Larry Bird. And so for me, I think they're right neck and neck. They felt like they had to be a pairing for me back to back, but Magic before Larry. So that's why I'm going to go Larry Bird at number five.
I'm glad to hear you've come around on Larry Bird, Dylan. I'm really glad.
All right. Mitch, we'll go to you for number six. Who do you have in your number six spot?
Number six, actually, this is a guy that I bumped up a spot from the last time that we talked. I had him at number seven last time. I have him at number six time. This is Kobe Bryant. I have to put Kobe Bryant here. And look, what this guy meant to the game when he was on the court, off the court, posthumously, while he was alive. I mean, this guy is just he's another level. He's another level. We could name all the accolades and that'd be fine. But like, you know, the way that he wanted to expand the game internationally. I mean, this guy knew like 20 different languages or whatever it was. Like this guy, like the way he wanted to expand the game, not just internationally, but to women as well. His efforts that he put into the game is just unmatched. We talk about impact. Kobe Bryant is one of those impact guys on and off the court, and it's hard to leave the Black Mamba off outside of the top six for me. And I had to bump him up.
Mitch, I love you. I did the exact same thing. We both had him at seven last time, and I've moved Kobe up to six for me. And you know, I think the difference for me from 4 years from now to now is just that he won an Oscar, right? And I think that Oscar is enough to bump him up a spot on this GOAT list. You know, he can don't forget he's an Oscar winner, my friends. But I mean, it's Kobe.
That's called multifaceted.
Exactly, multifaceted. And you talk about impact, right? You ask every NBA player coming into the league right now, who did you watch growing up, right? As Jordan alluded to, who is your GOAT? They are all Kobe disciples, as we were as kids, because Kobe was that guy. He was the dude. And so, you know, I think that's reflected in the new generation.
Tell me how many times you've shot something into a trash bin and not yelled Kobe.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's impact. That's impact right there. So six felt good with me. I know we had him at seven last time, but gave him the bump here. Felt great about it. Jordan, let me guess. Did you have him at six?
Yeah, this is the end of my Laker run. I have Kobe at six as well.
I love it.
For all of the reasons you guys said, obviously. But honestly, guys, this is as close as it gets to this was my MJ. Like, I spent a lot of my younger years hating Kobe Bryant. Just like absolutely hating Kobe Bryant's guts. And then I became an adult and I wised up a little bit and I was able to respect Kobe.
2002 Western Conference Finals.
Yeah. I'm still listen. To be fair, I'm still working on that one. But I have grown obviously to just absolutely respect and adore Kobe. And not only like what he did on the floor, but just his impact on the game of basketball. We talked about how Magic and Bird saved basketball. Kobe saved basketball again. I think in certain ways. To the point where, like you guys said, the whole Kobe into a trash can thing. That's such a weird thing that every single one of us did for some reason. Like, I don't know why culture does that, but there are just some things that just culture unanimously globally all decides to do at the same time. And right. that truly speaks of impact on the game. So whether or not some people are like, oh, you guys have Kobe too high now because he died and you're showing respect. It's like maybe. Or he also is just that good and that impactful. On the game.
I think if Kobe were alive, we'd still give him this. I would still give him this respect because he's just that important to the game. That important.
No doubt. And I think the one thing, when you just look at his stats and his accolades, you compare it to others, the one glaring thing that stands out is the one MVP, right? How did Steve Nash win two MVPs and Kobe won one, right? Like they're playing at the same time and Steve Nash won two of those. And I'm like, no disrespect to Steve Nash, but like you look at that era and who he was competing with and the fact that only one wins one MVP, like keeps Kobe out of the top five. It just does. When guys won three or four or more, that's sort of that one thing that holds up Kobe in this GOAT conversation.
And we talked about this on the last time that we did this is like Kobe, as great as he was really a victim of circumstance because like he was right at the tail end of Jordan. Right. So he made his debut in 96. He was just right at the tail end of Jordan's prime years. Right. before he left Chicago and went to Washington. And then after that, he had to deal with LeBron. And LeBron comes in 03, and he's the greatest, you know, he's the best player in the league for about a 3 to 4 year span before LeBron supersedes him. Like, he was really a victim of circumstance, and it feels weird to talk about one of the greatest players of all time not being the greatest player in the league for more than a 5 year stretch. But Kobe was really just that. He was, you know, he constantly had someone breathing down his neck for it.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the
I mean, he was also made of glass is the other problem. Like, yeah, he was wedged between MJ and LeBron, but also the poor guy was literally like glass from the Unbreakable movies, wheeling around a wheelchair. Like, his ankles would just, they're gone. Like, see you later. And then, oh, Kobe played 6 games again this year. So when he was on the floor, my gosh, man, but it was hard to keep him on the floor at some point. So then when you got a man cooking barbecue chicken in your center spot, winning 3 MVPs, I mean, it adds up quick on you. So
yeah, fair enough.
Dallin, I am as the resident Kobe fan, just a little trivia for you. Do you know who he was drafted by originally?
Yeah, the Charlotte Hornets.
Okay.
Right?
I was just double checking. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. I was just double checking.
Also born in Italy, bro. I know my Kobe stuff. Kobe Bean Bryant, my friend. Don't you worry, my guy.
He wasn't born in Italy. I
okay, well, you live there.
He was born in Philadelphia, but you know, right, whatever. Well,
West, you know, so were we all, right? Isn't that the song? I'm just shocked that after the first one, we actually all had a consensus on one of these picks. We all had MJ at 1 and Kobe at 6. That is shocking. So before we move on any further, I just want to recap for the listeners where we are at so far on an individual list before we get through 7 or 10. So we'll start with you, Jordan. Just read through your 1 through 6 up into this point, and then we'll jump to number 7.
Yeah, I've got MJ, LeBron, Kareem, Magic, Shaq, Kobe.
I got MJ, Kareem, Bill Russell, LeBron, Magic, and Kobe.
Okay, and I am at MJ, LeBron, Kareem, Magic, Larry Bird, and Kobe Bryant. And now we go to number 7, and Jordan, we'll give you this one. Who do you have at number 7 here? I guess it's not a Laker. You've already told us that. So who is it?
No, we're going to the dark side. And actually, it's good I'm going first here because it's a guy we've already talked about. This is where I have Larry Bird. So I bumped Larry right. Bird down a little bit, which admittedly felt a little bit weird. But to me, in my heart, I had to put Shaq and Kobe up just a little bit higher and bump Bird down. If you ask my father, should have been my namesake, and thank God for my mom, and she pulled in the Michael Jordan direction. But my dad was trying to pull for Larry for the purpose of Larry Bird, so he deserves a spot on that list for that reason, if nothing else.
Larry Fox. I don't know. I like Jordan. It's good. It's a good one.
Yeah, Larry just doesn't. It doesn't work. So thanks, Mom.
Lawrence Fox. I don't know about that.
Oh man, I love it. Mitch, who did you have at number 7?
I had Larry at number 7 as well.
Okay.
I had Larry at number 7. I mean, so he's a couple spots down from where I had him originally. I think I had him at number 5 last time. But yeah, I mean, just the Mr. Fundamental. I mean, this guy was just a fundamentally great basketball player that really introduced creativity really well into his fundamental game. I it was hard to put Larry outside of the top 7.
Yeah, fair enough. I think 7 is fine. Listen, guys, I had him at 10 last time, so you're all doing way better than me. So, you know, don't feel bad about 7. I did way worse last time. So my number 7, obviously I already had Larry Bird. He was number 5. I had Wilt Chamberlain at number 7, and I actually flopped Kobe and Wilt here from my last time. I had Wilt 6, Kobe 7 last time. Kobe 6 and Wilt at number 7 here. Wilt, 4-time MVP, 13-time All-Star, 7-time scoring champ, 2 NBA titles, and obviously scored 100 points in a game, and that is pretty freaking cool. So I feel like that is enough to warrant, you know, not only being on this list, but maybe getting ahead of some of those other older big men around that era. I have another one right after him that I just sort of had him sneaking above. But Wilt, I don't know. I think just iconic, right? You think of Wilt the Stilt. I mean, it's that was pretty easy for me to put him at 7.
Yeah, I mean, Wilt was transcendent. I mean, this guy was a scorer before the 3-point line. I mean, this guy just he dominated the blocks, and that's what you had to do in that era. You had to dominate in between the blocks, and that's exactly what Wilt did. I don't hate that. I don't hate Wilt at number 7. Don't hate that at all.
Yeah, I don't hate it a bit. He's next on my list, so it's right in where I had him too. Dallin, what do you say to the people who like to push the narrative of like, oh yeah, Wilt scored 100, but he's playing against mailmen? What do you do with that take?
Well, I mean, I think everybody in that era was playing against mailmen, right? And that is why he is 7 for me, right? And like, he's not higher. Like, it's the reason why I have Bill Russell at 8. And not higher, because those guys were doing incredible things, but the level of competition was lesser. I value the modern NBA players more, honestly, because they played against tougher competition in a tougher league. There's more talent everywhere. It's harder to be good. There's a lot of freaking good players today. So to stand out amongst them, I think, is more impressive than it was back then. And that's not to take away from those accomplishments. And obviously, these guys are still in this top 10 conversation. They're still here, but I'm just going to value where the sport is at now, how much more difficult it is now, the level of competition. The game is just better, and as a result, it's making players better across the board.
Playing against mailmen, Jordan, I don't want to put him on blast because I love him, but that sounds like a Matthew Fox take.
It's not an uncommon, well, actually, truthfully, Matthew and I had a conversation, shout out to Matthew, who is my brother, that none of you listeners know at all, but we're pulling him into this conversation. We argued about this about 2 weeks ago, where I was kind of being a little bit disrespectful to Wilt, and was like playing the devil's advocate role of the mailman situation, right? Mostly okay. Just because I like to piss my brother okay. off, but he's kind of like you are, Mo. He goes for the history. He likes guys who kind of ushered in the game and showed dominance regardless of where they were at in what era. Also, guys, one thing that I think gets forgotten often with Wilt is just a cool another thing to add to like the mythos of Wilt Chamberlain is the fact that like he was a huge part of the Harlem Globetrotters before he entered the NBA. Like,
yeah,
which is way cool, right? Like you're part of this entertainment basketball organization that's like famously known. And he's like, oh, I'm just gonna go to the NBA and absolutely dominate all of these fools.
Yeah, I think that's a great point there. And obviously, it's a little difference in how we view this. Mitch having Bill Russell as high as he is, that's just a different way of doing this. And I think just disrespecting these players and leaving them completely out of the conversation is probably a little step too far. Obviously, we differ a bit here. But there you go. So you had Wilt at 8, as you mentioned, Jordan. As I mentioned there, I had Bill Russell at 8. So Wilt 7 and Bill Russell 8 for a lot of the same reasons that Mitch had alluded to earlier. But just I'm valuing maybe modern players a little bit more. And I like Wilt more than Bill Russell. So that's why I put Wilt over Bill. That was like literally the only reason why. It's a Lakers-Celtics thing. I don't know. I think that felt pretty easy for me. But Mitch, who was your number 8 entry?
It's where I had Shaq. Where I had Shaq at number 8. We talked about him extensively earlier. The dominance, the impact on and off the court. Guy's just a legend. He's an absolute legend. So we've talked about him at extent already. So I feel like there's not a whole lot left to add here for Shaq.
Yeah, so Shaq gets the bump for you, Mitch. He had him at 10 last time. He moves up to 8. Meanwhile, I had Shaq at 5, and I've moved him down to 9. You're now higher on Shaq than I was. The reaction last time when I had Shaq at 5 was like, what the hell are you doing, Dallin? And now you got Shaq higher than me.
Well, I was a big dummy last time. I was a big dummy last time, so... you come to your senses around certain players, and Shaq was one of those guys that I had to come to my senses about. Just like you came to your senses about Larry Bird, I came to my senses around Shaq. So, Shaq is definitely better than where I had him ranked last time. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, as I said, I had Shaq at 9 for all the same reasons you guys did. I had moved him back behind Kobe and then behind Wilt and Bill Russell. I just wanted to give a little nod to them. And I know the history thing, we just had this conversation, but they were also, 4 or 5 time MVPs. Like the accolade things that they had done as great as Shaq was, outweigh what he was able to accomplish in that era. So I gave a little nod to them by putting them ahead of Shaq and moving him down, but still my top, still in the top 10. I mean, it's freaking Shaq. We'll throw him at number 9 and feel good about that. Jordan, who did you have at number 9?
This is right about where my list is going to start making Mitch really mad, between 9 and 10 here, potentially. My number 9 guy is Tim Duncan. I have Tim Duncan at number 9.
I love that.
Great.
Wow, shocking. That is not how I thought this is going to go. So I'll just
so far so good
numbers real quick, right? Like 5-time NBA champion, obviously, 15-time All-NBA, 15-time All-Defensive Player of the Year. He's one of 5 players in NBA history to earn more than 25,000 points and 15,000 rebounds. Tim Duncan was the most quietly dominant NBA player in NBA history. Like, you could watch a San Antonio Spurs game and Tim Duncan could go off for a triple double and you would not have realized he logged more than 6 minutes. Like, he was just that kind of a guy. And I think for that reason, he gets disrespected sometimes. But for me, like, he deserves a spot on this top 10 list.
You mentioned the triple doubles thing there. Tim could go for 35, 10 and 10 and no one would bat an eye. Just be like, yeah, that's what Tim Duncan does. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Or like, even notice potentially. Like, they were like, Tim Duncan played in that game?
Yeah, it was incredible. It was incredible. But
I love that Duncan. Mitch, we didn't have Duncan on either of our top 10s last time. Did you have him on in your top 10?
So Duncan was my okay, so let's jump ahead a little bit because my number 9 was Wilt. Okay.
Okay. So this my number is where 9 you was had Wilt. Wilt.
Yeah, this is where I had Wilt. I had Tim at like 11 last time we did this list. I have Tim at 10. Now,
okay, so, same for me. I had Tim Duncan at 11 last time,
boys,
and I bumped him to 10. I'll go ahead and explain where you're at, Mitch, and I'll add my thoughts.
Look, I mean, Jordan explained a lot of that, man. It's just so just quiet dominance, man. And he was kind of a breath of fresh air when it comes to, you know, big personalities in the NBA and guys that like to talk, but they can also back up their game. Tim didn't talk. He was kind of a very quiet leader. But my God, can he put that stuff out? Yeah, he just could put out a performance anytime that he wanted to. I love Tim Duncan at the number 10 spot. I also considered his teammate and his mentor, David Robinson, as well, the Admiral. But I really think that Tim was kind of like David Robinson 2.0. He just kind of upped what David Robinson did and completely dominated in the most quiet fashion of all time. So I had to put Tim at 10. Had to.
Yeah, you know, we talked in the conversation about Kobe, the era he played in and that hard window between with MJ and LeBron, and how it affected Kobe. But the guy who is even more affected by this is Tim Duncan, right? Because in the midst of all that, oh, and there's Tim Duncan in San Antonio having 15 All-Star seasons and 15 All-NBA seasons and 2 MVP awards, more than Kobe, and just gets forgotten in that era. And as Mitch mentioned, you know, we both had him at 11 last time, but I bumped him in ahead of Hakeem Olajuwon for me at number 10. And it's because nobody had more All-Star appearances and All-NBAs on my remaining list. Nobody had more than Tim Duncan. Nobody had won more NBA titles than Tim Duncan. And he had 2 MVPs. And yes, he was a quiet, unassuming man. You didn't really think about him very much. He wasn't a face of the league in that sense. But he was a winner. And he was a fantastic player for a very long time, and he deserved some credit here. So I love that Mitch and I were able to sneak him in, and look at Jordan even putting him a little higher there at number 9. I mean, beating us to the punch, huh?
I'm just happy he was on all of our lists. I honestly thought I was going to come in here, say Tim Duncan, and then you guys were just going to kick me off the pod.
No, we love Tim Duncan out here. We love Tim Duncan out here.
Yes, and there's still one more pick left for us to kick you off on. So how about number 10?
Yeah, I'm excited I at least got through my whole list before this happens. But listen, I'm going to preface this by saying this man does not have the accolade list that the rest of this list does, but it's justified in my head. Number 10 for me is Stephen Curry for this reason.
Okay.
The conversation that we had about Kobe Bryant being our generation's MJ. Stephen Curry is this current generation's MJ. They're not shooting baskets into trash cans saying Kobe anymore. They're actually backing up 34 feet, throwing it overhand and yelling Steph. Like, basketball has changed. It's not going back. Like, we are seeing guys pull up from half court more and more and more, and that is primarily because of the fact that Stephen Curry has changed the game. Previous to them winning this championship, and especially previous to Stephen Curry getting this finals MVP, he would not have cracked my list. But now that Steph has that monkey off his back, they got the fourth title. To me, that was just enough to be like, not only did Stephen absolutely change the game of basketball in a way that it's never going to go back, but he now also has enough accolades to be able to point to be like, yeah, he's deserves at least a conversation.
I mean, he is the greatest shooter that God ever created. And I can't argue with that on that. I mean, we'll talk about him in just a second when we get to another part of this top 10. But, you know, he really is. I have no qualms with you putting him at number 10. I have no qualms with that whatsoever because of the impact that he's made, the winning that he has, the performance that he has, the moments that he's put out. Steph Curry, I have no problem with him being number 10 on that list. None whatsoever.
Curry is a name that I did consider, and he is in this group of the next five. And the reason why I didn't put him in the top 10, and I'm not surprised you did, Jordan, and I love that you did, because I wanted to talk about him and I wanted to talk about Kevin Durant and these types of players, because I didn't put Curry in because I think if he retired right now and didn't play another game, he's not a top 10 player all time. But at the end of his career, I think it'll be very obvious that he is worthy of being in this list. So for me, I don't project forward. I did the same thing with LeBron 4 years ago. I put him at four because I was like, I'm not going to project. And so I love that you did it. And he's in that list. And just to kind of run through, you know, we've run through some of the accolades for these other guys. Two MVPs for Steph, 8-time All-Star, 8-time All-NBA, 2-time scoring champ, 4 NBA titles. Obviously that, you know, being almost the most notable thing. But just the fact that he's playing at such a high level still. Another MVP could be right around the corner. He gets to 3 MVPs. He gets to 5 NBA titles, gets at least 12 All-Star games. I mean, come on. I mean, we just read all the accolades for everybody else. There'd be no question he's there. He is that next name, I think, to crack this top 10. But I just don't – for me, he wasn't there quite yet, which is why I kept him off.
Steph was number 12 on my list, by the way.
Okay.
I had knocked Oscar Robertson, who was in my top 10 last time. Knocked him down to 11. Steph is number 12 on my list. So, I mean, he is going to be the next name back into this top 10, for me at least.
Yeah, I mean, also, the fact that Steph was in Golden State from the years that they were just an absolute trash organization, that granted, that's coming from a Kings fan. They were a trash organization to now being just the echelon of basketball. And then also, like, the front man of, debatably, Kevin Durant was on the team. But really, like, if you ask around, Stephen Curry is the guy you named from the team of the greatest NBA team that's ever existed. That's tarnished a little bit, obviously, with how the playoffs went down. But still the greatest basketball team that we have seen record-wise, and Steph was the front of that, too. So I don't know, boys. This is a heart pick rather than a head pick, if I'm being honest. But, man, I love Steph. I love Steph.
I mean, We see Steph at number 10. Who are the next three in? Like, who are the next?
You had Bill Russell at like 11, correct?
Yeah, for me in this order, it would be Bill Russell, Oscar Robertson, and then KD.
But like, okay, so let's project a little bit. Let's project a little bit. Like, let's look ahead a little bit in time. Who are the next three of these current players that you would say are in this top 10?
Like, from players we're currently watching right now, like,
yeah,
who from modern basketball could crack this list at some point? Yeah, for me, it's Steph and Kevin Durant are the two people that pop out to my brain immediately. Other guys like Giannis is another guy that's just transcendent of kind of what basketball archetype has looked like. Like, that's just a body and a play style that's unique and we haven't seen before. So Giannis, I think, would also kind of be on that list. I think if we get and this might be a hot take, if we get healthy Kawhi from here on out and we see like Kawhi stay healthy for the rest of his career, I honestly think Kawhi could be not cracking into like literally the top 10, but he could be in the conversation for maybe spots like 13 through 17, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I love the Kawhi one because it very much felt like, especially after that Raptors finals, it was like, all right, well, he won the one when he was young in San Antonio. He won the one when he was the lead guy, the dog in Toronto. If he can win one more, if he pulls one off in LA or wherever else he ends up, potentially three championships, three different teams, he can win an MVP. Then, yeah, maybe he puts himself in that honorable mention tier. I love that. I just wanted to run through Kevin Durant's accolades up until this point as we talk about him and Steph. And they're about the same age. Durant has about 100 games, two more seasons, or 150 games, two more seasons worth of games under his belt than Steph. But other than that, pretty similar with where they're at in age. But Durant, one MVP, 12-time All-Star, 10-time All-NBA, four-time scoring champ, and two NBA titles. So, you know, I think Curry is definitely the number one as far as the most likely to crack this list. And obviously for you, Jordan, already in there. But I think Kevin Durant is well on his way too, especially with the pace that he's on as far as scoring and stuff. Like you look at Steph is 51st all time still in points scored, 56th all time in assists. Kevin Durant is 24th all time in points scored. So he's already close to top 20 and in another four or five seasons. He could be, he could be at the top. He's on pace to pass Kareem and LeBron at the end of his career if he kept this pace for a number of years. And so I think that's the one as well that really seems likely. Giannis is too far out, I think, to really project, but the two MVPs certainly helps his case. But to me, I think it's really, Mitch, I mean, tell me if you feel otherwise, but I think it's really Steph and KD.
I mean, I have Steph and KD, but I really want to put a sleeper kind of pick on who could be a top 10 if he continues the pace that he's been on, especially over the last couple of years. Nikola Jokic. If he continues the pace that he's been on over the last few years, you know, and I mean, this is really projecting out. I mean, this guy would have to continue this pace for, you know, the next 10 years for us to really, you know, for us to really consider this. But the guy's been on a pace of top 10 all time player over the last couple of years. If he continues that pace and continues to dominate inside the paint like he has been, Nikola Jokic could be someone that we could be mentioning 10 years down the road as a top 10 player of all time.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, just being a two-time MVP puts you in a tier of your own. You know, there's not many players that have won multiple MVPs in the history of the NBA. So I think Jokic is certainly there. And again, with Giannis, kind of the same deal. Two MVPs, he's got the Defensive Player of the Year. Giannis has the title already, and that's certainly going to help him in the conversations down the road. So, all right. Well, let's run through our top 10s one more time for the folks at home. We'll start with you, Jordan, 1 through 10 on your top 10.
Yeah, in order, I got MJ, LeBron, Kareem, Magic, Shaq, Kobe, Bird, Wilt, Tim Duncan, and Stephen Curry.
I got MJ, Kareem, Bill Russell, LeBron, Magic, Kobe, Shaq, Bird, Wilt, Tim Duncan in my top 10.
Okay, and I had MJ, LeBron, Kareem, Magic, Larry Bird, Kobe Bryant, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, Shaquille O'Neal, and Tim Duncan. Pretty similar list, boys. We had the two consensus, right? The two number one, Michael Jordan, number six, Kobe Bryant. A lot of similarities, but enough differences to have some fun discussions. I think these are solid lists. I'm feeling pretty good. How are you guys feeling about your list after all this?
I feel good. Like, obviously, I feel good about my list. These are all guys that I love and adore and really look up to as far as the game of basketball is concerned. So fun that we were kind of in consensus on a lot of the stuff here, Dallin, and fun that we found some consensus later in the list itself. And also that we were able to have some conversation about guys that maybe are debatable on as we got later in the list. But yeah, I feel great about where we ended up.
I love my list. I was glad I was a little bit of a contrarian when it came to the ordering of the list. It sounds like we had a lot of the guys same guys on the list, but you know, it's just I was glad to be a little bit of a contrarian, but I'm very confident in my list. Love the way that I ordered these guys, much better than I did the first time around. So
yes, I agree with you, Mitch, that I feel more confident about my list 4 years later, a little more sturdy in these takes. And I mean, it's just a fun exercise. If you guys haven't done this as you're listening here, I mean, just sit down. I mean, I'm sure you think about it. Oh, this guy, so-and-so is a top 10 player. So-and-so is a top 10. Well, you probably count out 15 guys in your head you think are top 10 players, but then trying to put those guys in an order and decide who's in and who's out, it's not that easy. It's a pretty fun exercise to do. So if you do that, you know, let us know. Share it with us on our social medias, or send us a message here on Anchor and let us know your top 10, because we'd love to get your feedback here. And Jordan, we just appreciate you taking time to jump on the podcast. Again, one of the Sports Hour guys. I mean, you're a part of this, and so we love having you on. Glad you could join us.
Yeah, boys, again, thanks for having me. It's always a blast to be on here, and especially it's especially fun to be able to talk some basketball. So
yes, I mean, and with all the things going around in the world of the Sacramento Kings, what better time to have Jordan on the podcast? 40 wins this year. We're feeling confident with you. We're on the team. We're Team Kings this year on the podcast, right, Mitch?
42-40 is when I got the Kings going.
Wow, we're going above 500, huh, Mel?
Oh yeah.
Getting okay. Spicy
all right,
here.
All right.
You
I
love
complain. I will not complain.
You'll love to see it. Well, that's going to do it on the podcast here today. Again, guys, appreciate you listening. If you don't already, follow us on social media. The Instagram is at the Sports Hour Guys, Twitter at Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter, no longer at Little Thoint. I have changed the Twitter handle. Secretly just slipped it in there on 4th of July and no one has noticed, but it is at Dallin Graff now, guys. I'm trying to, I got goals. I got ambitions.
Oh!
So we're just, yeah, it has happened. At Dallin Graff on Twitter. You could drop the follow there. It feels weird.
Wow.
I'm always a little thrown at heart.
Like, I'm stunned.
I'm mourning, guys. It's been a day. It's been a couple days, but I got goals. Listen, I can get verified, but I think the Twitter name is holding me back. So we're going for it. Get the blue check mark. We'll see how successful I could be. But yeah, no more Lil Thoint. At Dallin Graff there on Twitter, the Instagram, TikTok at the Sports Hour Guys. Also check out the website, wordpress.thesportshourguys.com. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you become a permanent part of the conversation. Go at anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Become a permanent part of the conversation. If you have a serious qualm with these top tens that we just laid out above in front of you, that you can get on anchor.fm/sportshourguys. Leave us a voice message. We will play it live right here on the show, so that you can voice your concerns with our top 10. You can listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcast. That's Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. Tell us that we suck, because Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better. The sports calendar is about to get really bare here this next week or so. We got NBA, Summer League, and like that is it. NFL is going to be full dormant. The NBA, you know, we're waiting on a couple free agents, but until the KD news happens, we're stalling. So we will keep you posted. We'll have some fun summer content over the next couple weeks as we get ready for NFL training camp and beyond.
I will say that this is the last month that we will ever have to worry about not having NFL football on the
television.
There you go. We will have NFL football back next month, and I couldn't be more excited. Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Yes, it's a great time, and we'll have more fun next week on the podcast, as we always do. So until next time, guys, we love you. We appreciate you, and we will catch you next week.
See ya!